on old age and thinking about old age from a biblical perspective. So our passage that we have read every time is from Isaiah 46. I won't read it tonight, but it just there God confirms his purpose and his promise to be with his people through all stages of life, from the womb to even to old age. He says, I will be with you, I will carry you, I will help you, I'll be God throughout that. And so we've talked about old age from several different perspectives, from the blessings of old age to the difficulties of old age to the calling to the elderly, the calling of God to the elderly we talked about last time. So that information was not just meant for those who were older, but it's meant for all of us. God's word speaks to all of us, and we learn from this how that we can support and love and care for one another in a godly way. And so tonight I want to think about that with you. So we're thinking about old age not from the perspective of those who are elderly. We're thinking about how those who are younger should think about, should think of how they should care for, how they should interact with those who are elderly. And so we went through this slide last time. I just would mention one thing again, just as a reminder. It is a Christian grace. It's a Christian blessing. It's a Christian duty. It's also a Christian grace to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. If you'll remember, we looked at that word visit in James 1:29, I believe it is, where it says pure religion, undefiled before God the Father, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. That word visit in Scripture, when speaking of Christ, who would be coming to this earth, that God has visited us through his tender mercies. And so the way that God visited his people was not just to drop by and say hello and wish them well, but God visited his people in a much more significant and meaningful way. He gave of himself. He laid down his own son and gave his son that we might live. So he saw our need. He met our need in the most costly fashion to himself as he gave himself for our good. Praise God for the way that God has visited us. So it's in that spirit that we are to think of loving, visiting, caring for the elderly in our congregation, the elderly in our families, the elderly in our communities. If you're struggling with idle time and not spending your time very well, then I would encourage you to find someone who is elderly and begin to invest your life in them. So let's think about this, honoring the elderly tonight. Let's turn, first of all, to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy 5, this is Paul's letter of instruction to his son in the ministry, Timothy. And I'm going to read a portion of this chapter. I'll start in verse 1. 1 Timothy 5, verse 1. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the older women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. Honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow have children or nephews, and by the way, the word nephews there is sort of an old English word. Back then, that would include grandchildren. In fact, it would mean grandchildren. If any widow have children or grandchildren, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplication and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. And these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. And I'll stop reading right there. We'll look at some of this passage for a few minutes. But I want you to notice with me, first of all, just the atmosphere of honor that should be in the home and in the church. So both the home and the church, both where you live and where you worship, are mentioned in this passage. Look at chapter 5, verse 1. He's speaking to Timothy as a pastor. And he says, rebuke not an elder. It's not an elder as in pastor there. It's an older person. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. Now he's talking to Timothy as he interacts with others in the church. And the first thing you should notice here is that God expects us as believers to give thought as to how we interact with each other. He expects us to give thought to how we speak to one another. So even not just the words that we say, but the way that we say them matter to God. So yes, our tone does matter, and the way we present does matter. And here specifically in this passage, as we think about living and interacting with the elderly, he says you're not going, the word rebuke is a strong word. It's a word that speaks of something that is harsh and strong. And there are times that brothers in the church have to be rebuked, right? We're told to warn those who are unruly. A father rebukes his son. He speaks to him strongly, harshly, to turn him from his evil way. And he says, that's never the approach you take with an elderly person. It's never the approach you take with an elder. Why? Why? Because, as we saw last time, in the fear of God, we understand the honor, the glory of the hoary head that has walked with God. There is a spirit of respect. In fact, that's really what the word piety means in verse 4. There's a reverence, there's a piety that should be a part of our conversation with the elderly. That's sort of convicting, isn't it? As a son, there have been many times when I have spoken with less than respect to my father, and God says, that's wrong. It's wrong. You don't rebuke, but you entreat. The word entreat is a much softer word. It's a word that seeks to convince. It's a word that's one to try to persuade, but in a much softer way than you would rebuke. Okay? So, parents, it's important for us that we teach our children to show respect to those who are older. You know, we have, I guess, customs, things like yes sir and no sir, yes ma'am and no ma'am. Well, that's not Bible that you say yes sir and no sir. That's our custom, right? It's a custom of our culture. But whatever shows respect, we ought to do it. We ought to do it, and we ought to do it consistently. I was thinking today as I was reading this back years ago to when I was in Grace Christian School, and Brother Jimmy Barber is our teacher, and this was really annoying, but I look back on it now with fondness. Every time, we had a one-room school, every time that an adult walked into the room, we were required to stand up, and then when they said, you may be seated, we could sit down. And, you know, that's not, that may have come from Leviticus 19 about the rise up before the elderly. I'm not sure where that came from. But I love what it taught us, or what the attempt was to teach us, that we are, as younger people, we are to always interact with the elderly people in a way that gives no doubt that we have great respect for them, if for nothing else, just for their age. Now, thankfully, many of us are surrounded with those who are elderly who we can respect for much more than just their age, right? We can respect their godliness, we can respect their wisdom, we can respect their track record, but if for nothing else, he says, always entreat as a father, always interact with elder women as a mother. You would not speak, a godly person would never speak to their mother in the same way that they might speak to, a foe on the battlefield, right? So talk to them as a mother, to every elder woman in the church. And then in verse 4, the same thing at home. If any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first something that's been taught at home. Let them learn first to show piety, that's the respect, reverence, and to requite their parents. Listen to this, for that is good and acceptable before God. Know that. Whenever we act and speak in a respectful manner, God's pleased with that. It doesn't matter how much we may have been tried. I remember with that letter I read the very first time from the young man who is caring for his parents who are infirm and elderly now, and he talked about that. Sometimes doing this is not easy. Sometimes it can be very annoying to get called at midnight to change a light bulb or whatever the thing that seems to be so unnecessary is in the moment. And yet he says it's always right to still demonstrate respect. So a spirit of respect, and he says a spirit of repayment, right? A spirit of repayment. That's what it says, verse 4, to requite their parents. That's what's being taught in the home. That when there's the elderly in the family is saying, the family is being taught that it is our joy, maybe not always joy, it's our responsibility before God, to requite our parents. That's the spirit that he wants us to have as we interact with those who are elderly. That we are doing this from a standpoint of debt. We owe this to you. We owe you respect. We owe you care. We owe you attention. We are repaying what has been given to us. Now, I know that this can be challenging in some ways, especially to those in the congregation who may have had difficult relationships with your parents. Maybe your parents were not kind. Maybe they were not very thoughtful. Maybe they were neglectful of you. But the spirit of debt, I don't mean a debt where we can never get above water. But I mean the debt of gratitude. The debt of gratitude should be a mark of every Christian, right? Because God, in his mercy, gave you a righteousness that you did not earn. God released you from a bondage that you deserved. God's promise is of an eternity with Christ, seeing him face to face. So every part of life, from the greatest joys to the most difficult suffering, can still be approached from a standpoint of a debt of gratitude, right? So that's the spirit that he's asking us to have as we interact with the elderly. And then provision. Provision is the practical working out of faith. Verse 8, if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So James says, great, you say you have faith. Show me your faith by your works. You say you believe in God. That's great. Now prove it by your works. And this is one way that we prove out our faith in God, by providing for our own. Now, he gives us the specifics of that in this passage as well. The first line of responsibility of provision is the family. Now, the widows in this chapter are sort of broken down into different classes. Widows, indeed, is defined by those widows who don't have family, and certainly not believing family. that will provide for them. They're desolate. They're trusting in God. They're supplicating in prayers night and day. They're desolate. He says, church, that is your responsibility. And if you remember the book of Acts, even the deacons were first formed because widows were under the care of the church and they weren't being provided for very well in a fair way. And so they didn't just disband the practice. Instead, they said, we need to manage this practice better. We need to be more organized. But we cannot disband the provision for the widows. But the first area of responsibility, or the first line of responsibility, is, of course, the family. Now, let me say something about this. We are to provide for the needs. Provide for needs. That's what we're told. Provide for needs. Now, I want to say two things about this. Number one, you provide for the needs according to your ability. There are some who have felt desperately guilty, for example, when they were forced to put their parents into a nursing facility because they simply were not able to physically care for their loved one any longer. My answer to that is, if you are providing according to your needs, according to their needs and your ability, you should not feel guilty for that. Okay? Now, if you are being selfish and they have become an inconvenience to you and they're getting in the way of you enjoying life the way you want to enjoy it, then you should feel guilty about that. He will not provide for his own. He's denied the faith. And he's worse than an infidel. The other thing I'll say about it is this. You are to provide for the needs. Somebody came to me last Wednesday night after the service, and they said, Brother, this is really convicting. But they were dealing with a situation that's not that unusual. And the situation was that this family member was not just wanting their needs met, but they wanted attention and other things constantly, all the time, and it was just becoming a difficult relationship. And so I would say this, providing for needs does not mean that you always say yes. It means that you are making sure that their needs are provided for and that they're cared for and that you are doing, according to your ability, what you can do. But the needs is what God is requiring of us. Does that make sense? On one hand, neglect is ungodly, right? On the other hand, family relationships and people are not always reasonable. So you are to provide for reasonable needs. Now, I would encourage you to examine your heart and to get some counsel when you're trying to determine what's reasonable, not reasonable. Does that make sense? So in our frustration and our irritation, we can think that everything's unreasonable. So I would encourage you to pray. I would encourage you to search your heart. I would encourage you to seek wise counsel in helping you determine how to interact with, how to care for those who are in need. So that was sort of a general look at 1 Timothy 5. I want to close out this series by just going back quickly over the four categories of difficulty. We said that there are four categories of difficulty that are pretty common in old age, and then just thinking about how we might can visit or honor or serve in each of these categories of difficulty as we see them arise. So the first one was just difficulty with confidence, right? What once required no thought but now demands full attention. What once was comfortable now becomes uncomfortable. And then the pace of life can become disorienting. So let's think about that just for a minute. How can we practically help those who are dealing with the loss of confidence and as that the changes of old age and physical infirmities and bring? So I'm just going to try to be practical with this. The first thing that I would tell myself is this. Slow down. And exercise patience. Lord, give me the grace of patience as I deal with my father. Lord, I've got 1,000 things to do today. And I can take care of this item really fast. We were talking about this in marital counseling the other day, how that, you know, a lot of times as men, we tend to just want to fix the problem, right? And whereas we hit this place of hurt and conflict, because what our wives are interested in is not fixing the problem. They can figure out a solution themselves, probably. What they want is a conversation. They want you to understand where they are and how it's frustrating them. And it's important. It's important for us to live with our wives according to knowledge, and to live with the elderly according to knowledge. If things are going at a very fast pace, slow down. Slow down and exercise patience. What is simple to you may not be so simple. So, I don't know how to use this phone. Well, I've explained it to you 5 times how to use a phone, right? Simple things. Things that are just second nature to us that we need to be patient in. Kindness is always right. And I forgot who sent me this one, but I think it's a good one as well. Protect dignity. It's a way that you can honor those who are already feeling less than confident and protect your dignity. I think it's with my sister Hannah. She sent me several examples of just instances where, with something like buttons missed or food on the shirt, or just things that are common, really embarrassing things. Always be kind. Always be kind. Be kind one to another. Don't mock. Don't mock a loss of memory or anything else. God's people should be kind people. And then I would just say this: make every setting as comfortable as possible. I think an awareness, just being aware of challenges. We'll look at this passage in 1 John 3 on Sunday, but the person of love is a person who sees a need, and then his compassion reaches out toward that need. And I think the first step is the one that I most often miss: just seeing the need, seeing it long enough to consider it, and then try to make every setting as comfortable as possible. I told you this last time, but again, I remember, and this happened oftentimes with people who are older, but I remember the conversations I would have the last few months with Brother Claude. They took a while to get going. The first few minutes, there wasn't a whole lot going on, and then it just started to develop, and he would get more lively, and we'd have a great conversation. Be patient. Second one was identity. I think this is one of the biggest ones. Who am I when I'm not productive in the same way? Remember from that letter I read as well, the what he said about his dad. He said, you know, he was really skilled in his area of expertise, his career. He was very skilled, and people would want to talk to him and would want to ask him advice about things in that area, and he would be involved in a number of projects. And now he says, I'm pretty sure that nobody ever calls. Nobody would know if I died or was alive. So identified with what they had done, their career, that when that goes away, wondering what the purpose and value is. As we transition from doing to teaching, what is the value? We talked about that before. So how can we help in that? Deuteronomy 32, verse 7. First of all, that's a lie of Satan, right? Is our identity found in what we do? Not ultimately, right? For the believer, our identity is something much more secure. It's found in the relationship that we have with Jesus Christ through faith. That's who we are. As Paul said in Colossians, you are complete in him. I am what I am, Paul said, by the grace of God. So Paul found his identity in Jesus Christ in the relationship that he had with him. And so I think that one of the things that we can do, or one of the approaches we should always take for anybody who's expressing those sorts of questions about value, is not to just give some quick, patronizing answers. Well, you really are valuable in this way. And just say, brother, I know you feel that way, and I know that's not true. You are a blessing to me. I'm thankful to God right now that you are on this earth because of, let me read this to you, Deuteronomy 32, verse 7. Remember, this is the passage where God, the famous verse, he is the rock, his work is perfect, and God is calling on heaven and earth to listen. He's going to drop this great doctrine of his sovereignty and of his goodness and of his righteousness and of the foolishness of the nation of Israel to reject that and not follow him wholly. So he says in verse 7, remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Now, let me ask you a question. How far back can you remember? Case, how old are you? 11. So you might can remember back 10 years, right? Maybe 10 years on a really good day. Probably about 9 years. So how can you remember the years of old if you didn't live in the years of old, right? How can you know what happened in the 70s and 80s? How can you know these things? Because you've been told them, right? So you know a whole lot. Casey came back from Washington, D.C. He learned things about George Washington and the founding fathers and the Constitution. Somebody was telling him those things, right? So he says, remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. God continually tells Israel to talk to one another, to pass down. Deuteronomy 6, when you do this activity, your son's going to ask you, Dad, why are we doing this? And you're going to answer him, because back in the day when we were in Egypt, right? We were in Egypt, and God spared us and redeemed us. That's not a lightly valuable thing. It's a very valuable thing to be able to. My father was my father in the ministry, and while he knows Scripture well and knows doctrine well, can I tell you the most profitable times of training that I had with him, Justin and myself and him, the most profitable times we had were just sitting in his study, and we would say we were going to study some subject, and eventually it would just be him telling us stories and experiences, and there was more wisdom that we received out of those bull sessions than I could have gotten in 1,000 years of doing it myself, right? So there's great value there. So ask. It's a bad thing when age groups live completely segregated lives. So old people today know that. It's a bad thing. Seek out. David says, Lord, give me strength that I might go tell. Right? On the other hand, the rest of us, young people especially, all of us, understand what God has given you. Understand that God has given you fathers, faithful children of God, faithful elders who have walked with God, have stubbed their toes by their own sinfulness, have learned lessons, have seen God work, have seen sin corrupt. They can assist you. They may not relate to your, they will not relate to your your lingo, or maybe even to the specifics of the problems that you face in today's world, but they've walked with God a long time. So ask. Be proactive in soliciting experiences. Here's another one. Intentionally seek wisdom even when you think it is necessary. I think I borrowed that from that letter that I read to you as well, but I think it's wise advice and one that I try to do with my parents. I think that I have as much ability, maybe more than my dad, into how to buy a car, right? I can read the Kelley Blue Book. I can read the Auto Trader. I can read the Consumer Reports. I can see what the prices are. In fact, I think I'm probably better at it than him. But I'm not going to buy a car without talking to him about it and telling him everything about it, just so that I can get his wisdom, and partially so that he'll know that his son cares about his thoughts. Okay? Take them seriously. If you want people to believe that they have value, take them seriously. One of the things, well, I won't name individuals, but one of the things that that I think happens as we get older is that we gradually lose the ability to think on multi-levels, if that makes sense. So issues can become kind of complicated. And a lot of times elderly people are not interested in all the details. They just don't think on all those different levels. And so there can be a tendency or a temptation then to not take their thoughts seriously or their comments on issues seriously, because you think, well, you haven't really thought through that as well as I have. And that may be true, but that doesn't mean that there is not a ton of wisdom coming forth, even if they are not able to express it on the same level that you might be able to express. Does that make sense? Even if it can't be expressed that well, take their thoughts seriously. And then I would say assist them in identifying specific purposes. I think I mentioned this before, but one of the things my grandmother told me is that it's been a real blessing to her. She can't sleep very well at night. Somebody made for her some prayer cards, and by that I just mean some index cards with different prayer requests on. Her mind's not didn't have great recall, and so she has a great time praying through the night when she wakes up over these different needs. Well, somebody probably took 30 minutes to make some cards for her. That's not hard. There are people in our church who spend elderly people in our church who spend a lot of time with nothing going on, and you can see the debilitating effect that it has. It would be great. Now you can bring a horse to the water and you can make a drink, right? But it would be great if we could help identify something specific for those who are wondering what their value is to do. Let's move on through this quickly. About out of time. Difficulty with loneliness. It's an obvious one. We live busy lives. We don't all have as much freedom as I do, being a pastor. But what I had a pretty bad track record of faithfully getting out to visit the elderly. As I've got to change that. I have good intentions, but I get busy. And so what I just finally did is I just found one slot each week and said every Wednesday afternoon, I'm going to go and visit the elderly in our congregation or the elderly that I know that are sick. And so I would say that's been a blessing for me. If you are having trouble remembering or trouble just being consistent in that, that's your family or whoever else, I would encourage you just to say, this slot, maybe it's Sunday afternoon after church, we're going to go by for an hour and visit grandma or visit the elderly. Adopt an elderly person. I've seen people do that and it'd be a great blessing. Sister Melissa Bishop just sort of adopted her neighbor, who's an elderly lady. Her family lives far away. She's not her family, but she just is her neighbor. And that lady has her life has been so enriched by the Bishop's adopting of her. And then teach children to love the elderly. Teach children to not be afraid of the elderly. I don't know why I had that one next to it, but that's a good thought too. Oh, this is another good one. Help them. Part of finding the value, but also help them find good material to read, if they can read or they're able to read. If they can't, to listen to. Sister Darlene would tell you this, but YouTube was an incredible blessing, Brother Claude, wasn't it? He figured out how to use YouTube, and he would tell me, I can't really read and process real well anymore. I don't enjoy reading anymore. But he would find sermons and theological talks on YouTube, and he would spend his time really rejoicing over what he was hearing. So find profitable things, and we have such good technology now that there should be an avenue for filling the mind and decreasing loneliness. And then, of course, needs. Let me just close out this way. I'll just put all these on the board at one time. Show compassion to even the small needs. Needs that we deem to be small are not small for those who can't meet those needs. So the limb that's overhanging the gutter is a small thing until you can't reach up and grab it, right? It's also not the most important thing in the world. But you can at least show compassion to it. Don't just completely forget about it. You might not be able to get it today. It might have to be next week. But don't forget it. Show compassion to it. Of course, that one goes without saying, be patient and cautious when removing independence. That's a painful time. It's the wisdom to know how and when is difficult. God will guide. He promises to guide within every stage of life. Does it mean you'll always be the most popular person? But I would just say to you, be cautious and be thoughtful as you do it. You're not responsible for anybody's reaction, but you are responsible for how you approach any subject. And then, this has been a blessing for me, just recognize the relief brought when the need is met. I think I told you this before, but my dad asked Noah and I several years ago to help him get ready to die. He just meant, he didn't mean Dr. Kevorkian. He meant just get his affairs in order. You know, what is my burial policy, and where is the casket, and what happens, where's my will, and what happens here, what happens there? And, you know, we didn't really want to do that, and so we just didn't do it for a couple of years. And then we just did it over a couple of days. It didn't take as much time as I thought it would take. And it was, I cannot tell you what a tremendous relief it was to him. His concern was, I didn't even understand it. His concern was, I don't want to leave my wife in a tough spot financially. And I don't want to leave my wife in a tough spot just trying to figure out where my stuff is and how it all works after I die. I want it to be clear ahead of time. I want my son to take care of it. And so if I had thought about it and been compassionate to it earlier, we'd done that a long time ago. That's all I have. May God bless us to love one another well. And may God bless us to believe and rest in his promise that even to old age, he will be God. Thank you for listening to this message. Our prayer is that you've been blessed by the messages and the daily devotional blog on sermon audio from Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. We would love the opportunity to be of greater service to you and your walk with Christ. In other words, we would like to get to know you better. Do you have need of counsel, of a home church, or can we just pray for you? Please feel free to contact us by phone at 662-837-8590 or visit our website at www.ripleypbc.com.